Hello and welcome to another all-new episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. As always, I am your host, Tyler, and I will be joined momentarily by Bill Koch of the Providence Journal as we dive into the second-round NCAA tournament matchup between Providence and Richmond. But real quick, I just wanted to hit on Richmond's really quite thrilling victory over Iowa, one of the funnest games of day one. Certainly the most entertaining of the afternoon session. And really, this is a discussion about three players who went above and beyond in that game. The first is obviously Jacob Gilliard, who, with his back against the wall of the end of his career, is putting together the greatest run of games he's ever had. He hasn't sat on the bench since February 22nd against GW. He hasn't sat for more than 2 minutes since the first day of February against Duquesne. He's played every single moment of these last five tournament games and has put up the stats to match, scoring the last four 32-11, 26-24. He's got 20 assists across those five games. Yesterday, he even kicked in six rebounds to offset the fact that he actually had a zero steal game, a rarity for him, but against a good veteran guard in Jordan Bohannon, even though he shut him down defensively, wasn't able to take the ball off of him at any point. That's not entirely unexpected. But he's the guy that you need in March right now when you're an underdog. He's Shabazz Napier-like, where just this fantastic veteran guard is just carrying a team of underdogs right now. And as long as he continues to play great basketball, they're going to have a chance to beat anybody. And that's what happened yesterday. He kind of carried them through the first half where things just were not going well offensively, although the defense was outstanding all game for the entire Spiders team. But he held them in it. Chris Mooney got to go in, make his halftime adjustments, and start targeting the rim. And so in the second half, the rest of the team stepped up and got it done. The other guy who was fantastic the whole way through was Tyler Burton. And ironically, he and Gilliard have almost kind of switched roles in this offense compared to what it used to be earlier in the season. Gilliard is now kind of the boom or bust big shot guy, although it's basically been entirely boom these last few days. He's hitting just about everything. Burton is now more the steady hand type, the guy who is getting them buckets when they desperately, desperately need it. He's gotten to the line 39 times in the last five games. It's nearly eight a game. That's absolutely remarkable. And that's why, despite the fact he has not shot the ball particularly well from the field, he hasn't had a game with multiple made threes in that stretch. But he's been the second best offensive player. Because when they need the game to slow down, he has shown an ability over and over again to just get to the cup and just draw fouls. Obviously, this is not the important discussion right now because they still have a season to play, but it's that skill that's going to get him into the NBA eventually. It's that that's going to impress scouts enough for him to get a shot because we've seen the shooting already this year. The defense is solid, but what he's done around the rim these last few games is really special. He doesn't turn the ball over down there. He doesn't get blocked. He gets in. He gets himself entangled into these webs and gets to the line. And by the way, when he starts crashing for rebounds, he gets himself entangled in those same webs and continually comes out with the ball. There was nothing flashy or spectacular about what Tyler Burton did yesterday. It was just complete and steady excellence, as he's had throughout this. By the way, 8-plus rebounds in all five of the games in this stretch for Tyler Burton. He He's hitting the glass hard against teams that you have to be able to rebound well against, and offsetting the fact that Richmond's starting big men are not particularly great on the glass. Lastly, of course, it's Nathan Kao. That second half is the Nathan Kao half. And that's how it should be referred to in Richmond lore. It was very clear throughout the first half that Iowa's interior defense was incredibly soft. As we heard from Andrew Downs on the preview pod a few days ago, that's been the Hawkeyes' weakness all year. Richmond was getting downhill. Maybe it was that they weren't going up strong enough. Maybe it was that the refs were calling this game very loosely. But they were not getting anything trying to score in traffic in the paint in the first half. And in that second half, they decided to just keep going to it. Kao was the guy. He fueled that attack. He shoots 7 for 11 from the field. He hits a critical free throw despite his much mocked motion. And he was the offensive engine in the second half. But his contributions went beyond that. He was the guy tasked with guarding a future top 10 NBA draft pick in Keegan Murray for most of the game. And yeah, you look at Murray's stats. He went 8 for 15 from the field. It looks like he had a great game. And he kind of did. Every time he got the ball near the rim, he was going to score. So it wasn't a matter of keeping Murray off the score sheet. It was a matter of keeping him from ever getting to his spots. If he had been able to get 20-plus attempts in this game, he would have made 11 or 12 of them. That's the difference. That's what Nathan Kao contributed to this team, is that he prevented a solid half-dozen shots from ever even going up. He was great at checking Murray when he got the ball up top. He was not letting him drive into the paint, and he did a good job of fronting post-ups. So even though Murray carried Iowa's offense, they needed more from him, and they could have gotten more from him against a lesser defender. If you didn't watch this game, you look at the box score, you see 15 points from Nathan Kao. You think, oh, nice job. He was a key assister to what Gilliard and Burton did. But if you watch this game, you know that that's just an unbelievable understatement. To me, this was the most impressive 20 minutes of his career. And it's been a long career. But all of these Richmond guys just continue to have moments. Gilliard's had this whole tournament. Burton's had various different second halves where he's really stepped up big. Matt Grace had the winner against Davidson. Grant Golden was spectacular in the first half against Dayton to keep them afloat. Now Nathan Kao has his moment too. And that's what it takes at this point to keep winning. It's a lot of older guys who are just stepping up and playing big when they absolutely, absolutely have to. The only other thing to mention in that game, the wing rotation got a little funky. Andre Gustafson just couldn't keep himself out of foul trouble throughout. Connor Crabtree played some bit minutes. He ended up logging 13. It really kind of felt like he was out there less. But he had some foul trouble himself. I know he's been dealing with injuries. But Crabtree's had some moments throughout these last few games. He manages to get himself into steal lanes. He'll make a nice deflection or two. He's always good for about a 3 a game. And we saw in that game that Mooney just really didn't trust Nick Sherrod defensively. And as they keep moving forward, I think Connor Crabtree's going to have to make a big play or two. So we'll see if that can continue to happen. I think he's a guy who is a very sneaky candidate to put up a big 8 to 10 points with a nice steal or two off the bench. Maybe not against Providence. Maybe it's next weekend if they can advance. But if they keep playing, he's going to have his moment as well. Now on to Bill Koch to take a look at the Richmond-Providence game. Join the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network on Saturday, April 30th for Purple Stride, the ultimate event to end pancreatic cancer. Learn more and register for free today at purplestride.org/ whatever city you are in. Purple Stride will be taking place in plenty of cities around the Northeast, including Boston, Charlotte, Cincinnati, Columbus, New York City, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Warwick, Rhode Island, Richmond, St. Louis, Washington, D.C., and Buffalo. So be sure to go check out a location near you. All right, I'm now joined by Bill Koch of the Providence Journal to help us break down the Providence Friars. Bill also covers Rhode Island on the side, so we have found the one rare person who specializes in a big-time team with some A-10 knowledge on the side. Thanks for joining the show, Bill.
Tyler, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and so as I mentioned, we're going to cover the Providence game against Richmond, and this is a team that I have actually had the pleasure of watching a few times this year. Just the timing has worked out that Providence is on when I'm looking for a game, and I am incredibly impressed by their big man, Nate Watson. 13.6 points a game, 5.5 rebounds. It actually really feels like it should be higher than that in both categories from what I've watched. But for a Richmond team that has been very shaky at times in terms of interior defense, what kind of threat does he pose to the Spiders in this game?
Yeah, he's really tough at the rim, shoots a really high percentage from two, and is going to be familiar with Grant Golden. He's played against his brother Bryce Golden at Butler I don't know how many times. So he's going to know that body type and maybe some of those mannerisms. I think it's Watson's production is generally a product of how many touches he gets. And sometimes if you watch Providence, it almost feels like they forget he's on the team. And they might take perimeter jumpers or try to get up and down. I know in their first round game against South Dakota State, he scored on two possessions early, and then they largely went away from him when he had a mismatch inside. So, it depends on what their game plan is in a given night, but he's certainly a good option in the paint and is generally a pretty efficient player in there.
Yeah, and you mentioned yesterday's win over South Dakota State. A lot of people felt like that was the easy upset pick of the tournament, and the Vegas books basically agreed they had Providence as a slight favorite, despite the fact that they were the Big East regular season champions this year. And this really just kind of seems like a team that's been disrespected so far. They've been considered to really be lucky, but at some point when you've won 27 games on the year, whether it's luck or not, it starts to turn into a skill. And I know in your piece yesterday, their head coach Ed Cooley mentioned that the players were listening to this noise. They were listening to everyone picking South Dakota State. Is there going to be a chip on their shoulder continuing into this Richmond game? Are they kind of the nobody believes in us team right now?
I think over the course of the year, this sort of started, maybe in late December, early January, this narrative of, they're lucky and they're fortunate and how are they winning all these single-digit games and games decided by five or less. And I think it was amusing to the players at first. I think they got a laugh out of it for a while. But Wednesday, for the media availability, the day before the game, I sensed a little change in tone. They seemed more annoyed by it than what I could remember. A.J. Reeves in particular had a great quote. He said, we're 25-5 and people talk about us like we're bad. Like we have guys who can't do this and guys who can't do that. I think we're pretty good. We've played in the Big East. We won the conference. We've beaten some good teams out of conference, whether it was Texas Tech or Wisconsin. What have we done wrong? Why can't people look at us and see a good team? And I sensed that attitude shift from them. And once I heard them speak at the podium, I felt really good about their chances against South Dakota State. I told a friend, I said, I'd be very surprised if they lost this game. And they played pretty much the way they've played throughout the regular season. It was physical. It was grinding. They made a couple big plays down the stretch and won it by single digits. That's who they've been.
Yeah, and they moved to now 26-5 on the year. Like, for a Big East team to have that kind of record, be sitting as a 4 seed and to be now just a slight favorite over a 12 seed is really just shocking. And you go up and down with this team, all of their metrics. There's really nothing that these guys do poorly. They don't force a lot of turnovers. That's about it. Any other weaknesses that you could see potentially being a problem against the Spiders?
In Providence's case, you mentioned defensively they don't necessarily force a ton of turnovers. That's sort of dinged them in KenPom throughout the year. You know, every once in a while they go wayward from three-point range. That can happen. You know, they'll have a night where they don't make a ton of shots from deep. You know, and could be overly reliant on that and lose because of that. You know, some other things. I think Al Durham's been playing hurt for about 2 months. He has a sports hernia. He's not going to be 100%. He was a different player in November and December than he is now. You wonder about a quick turnaround for him, how he's going to be physically. You know, you're curious what's going on with Justin Manaya. He's got a sore knee. Big defensive presence for them. You'd imagine he's going to play Tyler Burton. That's a really tough challenge on the wing. You know, if he's anything less than 100% in a quick turnaround, Tyler Burton put on a physical display against Iowa. Will not be an easy cover for Manaya, and he could need some help. You know, and you're curious just the fact that a lot of these guys, even though they are older, they haven't played in the NCAA tournament before. Nate Watson was the only one with any real significant experience in that way. And as these games go on, the stakes get raised. You're looking at Richmond. They're a 12 seed. They wouldn't have been in the field, you know, before that run through the A-10 tournament. All the pressure's on Providence, in my mind. You know, they're supposed to make a Sweet 16 here. You know, they are the 4 seed. They are the favorite. They're going to be looked at as the team that is supposed to win the game. And I think that carries with it a little extra push, you know, a little extra nervous energy. And I'll be interested to see how Providence comes out and reacts.
Yeah, and they're very similar to Richmond in that way. Two very old teams. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that Providence starts 3 grad students right now. But neither of them have a ton of postseason experience, largely because of those missed years in between.
Yeah, it's, you know, Richmond, obviously, with the super seniors, whether it's Golden or Jacob Gilliard, you know, Nick Sherrod, obviously. Nathan Kayo has played college basketball forever. You know, that group really did a great job starting in the A-10 tournament of just seizing its last chance, really. This was a last ride for those guys. And I'm sure they didn't have the regular season that they wanted, finishing 6th in the league. But the fact that they were able to pull it out in the tournament, get themselves an automatic bid to March, and then author a 5-12 upset over Iowa, you know, played a really solid game. You know, they were tough in the second half. They ran Iowa off the three-point line all day. It was a really good performance by Richmond. They thoroughly deserved to win. You know, and I'm impressed, you know, by how their older guys have sort of seized this moment and are, you know, really, really trying to extend it for as long as they can.
Yeah, and both teams certainly would be a very fun story for the NCAA if they can make a run coming out of this game. You always want to see these veteran teams win. But I want to go to two other veterans on the Providence team, and these are ex-A-10 guys. They are guys who we at this podcast have been watching since they were freshmen. Jared Bynum, formerly of St. Joe's, 6th man of the year in the Big East, actually made all-conference second team. And then their other next top bench guy, Ed Crosswell from LaSalle. So for our listeners who maybe still remember these guys from it's been a few years now, what kind of impact do those two have on the team? Are they going to really have to have big games for Providence to be successful?
They are difference makers. Bynum in particular is a guy who has really been good over the last 3 months. You know, you mentioned these guys from A-10 days. I think an A-10 fan might not recognize the two players that they are compared to who they were before. You know, Bynum's game's a lot better. He shoots it a lot better from three. He's much more confident with the ball in his hands. Crosswell has lost 30, 40 pounds over the last calendar year. You know, started doing boxing workouts at home in Philadelphia. Has turned himself into a physical factor. In the paint, different from what he was at LaSalle. He is nimble, agile, can get up and down the floor. Had 9 rebounds in the win over South Dakota State. That tied for a team high. That was his most in a game since December 4th when they beat Rhode Island. 6 of those were on the offensive glass. And, you know, what that did, even though Providence didn't necessarily cash in terms of second chance points, but it prevented the Jackrabbits from getting out on the fast break more than they did. It forced them to play defense a little bit longer. You know, Croswell was a physical presence in there, you know, that you need, honestly, in the NCAA tournament. You're not always going to shoot it well. You're going to have to do some of the dirty work to win some of these games, and he was great in that way. So those two guys have been critical pieces so far for Providence, and I would imagine that they would need to continue to do that if Providence is going to continue to advance in this tournament.
Yeah, and despite coming off the bench, Bynum actually has a significant lead on the team in terms of assists. And so he will likely be tasked with having to deal with Jacob Gilliard throughout this game. Certainly on the offensive end, I would assume that Richmond's going to use Gilliard to try to slow down Bynum. On the defensive end, I would assume that he draws that matchup a little bit too. Jacob Gilliard's just on an absolute heater right now. Yeah. Do you think Bynum's going to be able to have his normal game in this matchup?
Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see. Obviously, Gilliard makes life difficult for everybody. You know, he's so quick. He's so active on defense. And against Iowa, he scored. You know, was making threes. He made his free throws down the stretch. You know, really assertive in that game. And I think Richmond is at its best, you know, when he is taking command and dictating pace, you know, leading them at the defensive end. I really see just – he's such a dynamic player, you know, the type of guy who can change the attitude on an entire roster. You know, and I know that Providence will be worried about playing someone like that. You know, you look at the games that they've lost, they've been to great point guards, whether it's Villanova and Colin Gillespie. You know, Creighton, Trey Alexander had a great game at the Big East tournament. You know, that's a difficult matchup for just about any team. And I think largely because you can't simulate the things that Jacob Gilliard does in practice. You can't simulate that quickness, that speed, and that directness.
Yeah, and it really seems to me, just talking to you, that the biggest obstacle, and this is going to sound like a really outlandish statement, each team's going to have to try to stop the other one's star. And they're not particularly adept at doing it. And so can Providence slow down Gilliard? Can Richmond slow down Nate Watson? To me, it seems like that may be the most important two questions in this game.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, like, philosophically how they attack each other. I know Chris Mooney was asked, you know, about Providence in his postgame, and he said, I don't really know a lot about them. I haven't really studied them as much. In terms of personnel, he said, I know they're really good. I know they've had a great season. He said, and I know Ed Cooley. I am a huge fan. I think he's great for college basketball. You know, I know that his team takes on his personality in terms of being gritty and tough and, you know, survivors in that way. You know, so I think it'll be fascinating from the standpoint that, you know, they don't really see each other that often. They don't really have a reason to scout each other that often. You know, Richmond plays a little bit different style compared to anyone else in the Big East. You know, whether it's backdoor cuts on you know, motion offense, you know, occasional switching man-to-man defense. It is distinct in that way under Chris Mooney. You know, Providence, can Richmond match just how tough they are and how difficult 40 minutes is going to be against them? You know, you could see South Dakota State sort of wearing down in the second half, struggling to get open looks. At times they had, you know, didn't have answers on offense and they're not used to that. You know, so they'll be able to stifle Richmond a little bit at the defensive end. I think that changes how they look at the game.
Yeah. And on the defensive end, our friend of the program, our Richmond correspondent, Noah Goldberg of ESPN Richmond, wanted me to ask you what kind of defense Providence runs, where are the strong points of that defense?
You know, largely man-to-man. You know, Ed Cooley's philosophy is no threes and tough twos. He wants to run you off the line and make it difficult for you to score in that way. You know, they're going to be physical. He recruits athletes in that way. He wants guys to be big and strong and quick. You know, and if you look at his lineup and you look at guys like Manaya, like Noah Horkler, you know, who's 6'9", can jump out of the gym. He's got long arms, really gets after it on the defensive glass. You know, Watson obviously is an anchor in the middle, you know, just so physical and strong. I think philosophically, generally, that's what they try to do. You know, it's just man-to-man, body up on you, not let you get open looks at the rim, not let you set your feet from three-point range. You know, just try to make everything uncomfortable for you. And they've done a pretty good job of that in Ed's 11 seasons at Providence.
All right. And we'll close out the discussion on the game with one final question here. Since you are familiar with both teams, I'm not going to push you into trying to make a prediction here. Don't want you to anger the Providence fans if you turn against them and pick the A-10 team. But what do you feel like is going to be the most important thing in dictating who wins this game?
Yeah, you know, I think it'll come down to which team can make a few shots. Can you find easy offense in any way? You know, because I know a lot of times when you get into this tournament, teams playing so hard, it's easy to get bogged down. You know, it's hard when you don't see the ball go through the basket early or regularly. You know, it's tough. You get into a tractor pull, and mentally that's a grind. And I think it would help if one of these teams had a shooter get off early. For Richmond, whether that's Gilliard or Burton. For Providence, whether that's Horkler or Bynum. You know, those guys are probably the most capable from three. You know, you wonder if there's going to be anything easy here either way. You know, because otherwise you're looking at a game that might be in the high 50s, low 60s. You know, it's going to be hand-to-hand combat for 40 minutes. Not going to be a lot of fun to watch if you're a neutral. But if you're a fan of both teams, I would imagine it's going to be engaging and really tense.
Yeah, and we will see if someone can break the tension with a hot streak early. We're going to close things out here. You, as I mentioned at the top, you also do some coverage of the Rhode Island Rams, who made a huge, huge, huge splash last night hiring Archie Miller. Where do you see this program now going in the near future with Miller at the helm?
A major statement of intent by Thor Bjorn, the URI athletic director. Probably the best available candidate on the market at this point, Archie Miller, you know, was a prolific winner at Dayton. You know, had a more difficult time in Indiana. Obviously, that's a bigger job. There are different expectations there. You know, different recruiting there. You know, different interests there, different fan base, different boosters in terms of how they can dictate your future. You know, and maybe that came a little early in his career. You have to take it. It's Indiana, you know, but maybe a few years from now, if he gets another shot at a Power Five, he'll be more prepared in a certain way. His coaching will have changed in a certain way, and he'll flourish there. But in terms of what Rhode Island is getting, I think A-10 fans know it well. You know, his teams are connected, play great defense, usually have interchangeable parts. You know, it seemed like Dayton's whole team was 6'6". 6'7", you know, when he was really good, you know, guys like Kendall Pollard and Jordan Seibert are elite players and really strong recruits. Culturally, they were very good, you know, very disciplined team, didn't turn the ball over much, really valued every possession and played hard. You know, and I think it's an exciting hire. It's one that, you know, has really given a lot of encouragement to the folks in Kingston. I know the last 2 years have been difficult for them, being under 500 twice. You know, David Cox is a great guy, you know, who did right by his players, who did right by the community at URI. It just wasn't working out on the floor. And, you know, you wondered where it was going to go in the future. You didn't necessarily see it turning around at any point. But Archie Miller gives you a fresh start, you know, and really some excitement back into the program that they haven't had since going to the NCAA tournament twice under Dan Hurley.
Yeah, and we saw from his time at Dayton, and even with how well Trace Jackson Davis has played this season at Indiana, when Archie Miller can pick up guys and develop them, he can be a very good coach, and that's what he's going to do at Rhode Island. This is a different job than Indiana, so I know Matt and I are going to touch on this more next week, but I personally think it's just an unbelievable home run of a hire for the Rams. So,
yeah, it is. And, you know, you mentioned player development, and I think, you know, you look at Indiana and you look at some of the guys that he had there, and I go back to like Romeo Langford specifically. I mean, that's a five-star recruit, an in-state kid. You have to get him. You know he's going to be one and done. But you're relying on a freshman to win a lot of games in the Big Ten. That's difficult to do. You know, it's hard. I think Shaka Smart had some of the same problems at Texas. You know, you have to go for guys like Jackson Hayes. You know, but you know that it's a big guy with still a lot of runway in front of him who's going to be one and done, and he's not necessarily going to play his best basketball for you. That's going to be the NBA. You know, and I think when you come from maybe more of a player development background as opposed to a superstar background in terms of coaching, it's a big adjustment to make. You know, it changes the way your teams play. It changes the way you compose your roster. And, you know, I just saw what Archie had at Dayton was just so impressive from the standpoint that they played a certain way and the pieces fit a certain way. And, you know, they were just so organized and together. You know, and I think that's something that you can build at the mid-major level. That maybe when you're at the high major level, it's a little more difficult to do.
Yeah, we shall see if Archie Miller can carry that success from Dayton up into the northeast corner of the A-10. But Bill Koch, thank you for joining me today. If anyone is looking for some great coverage on college basketball throughout the state of Rhode Island, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at BillKoch25. You can also find me at Providence.com. Journal.com. That is my primary employer. If I did not mention them, they would not be happy. You know, but either of those two places, you know, on spaces like this with 3Bid League, you know, and with other folks, I'm happy to talk college hoops. I love it. This is my favorite time of the year, March Madness. I hope everybody else is enjoying the games and the coaching carousel.
Yeah, well, thank you for coming on. I really appreciate you coming to talk college basketball with me. And hopefully you get another thrilling game in Buffalo tomorrow.
That'd be great. Thanks, Tyler. Yeah.
And thank you all for listening once again to the 3Bid League podcast. It's been a fun first week of the postseason so far. The A-10 is 4-1 at the time of this recording. And if teams keep winning, we'll keep putting out episodes. So stick around, keep an eye out for that. Enjoy this weekend of the NCAA tournament.